significance of battle in the Gita. In the Gita, we have a conflict between two groups of people based on a historical event. One group was ready to compromise the means and go against Dharma, even though Dharma is so very important. The other group was committed to maintaining the moral order, Dharma. This conflict can also be looked upon as one between a person's common sense knowledge and what he or she wants to accomplish, an inner war, an inner Mahabharata, so to speak. After all, every war takes place first in one's mind and only later outside. The moral order is considered to be so important that a person will sacrifice everything for its sake. In the Mahabharata, there are many stories of such sacrifice. One story is about a man who gave up his kingdom and everything else he had in order to uphold the universal value of speaking truth. Because India is a place where Dharma is important, it is referred to in the Gita as Dharma Kshetra. The Veda rules the hearts of the people and everything subserves the order of Dharma. In the country of Bharata, in a place called Kurukshetra, these two groups of people have assembled, prepared to fight. By the way, Bharata is other name for India, ancient name. One group does not understand the value of values, while the other group does. All eyes were upon Arjuna, considered to be the greatest archer. Arjuna's driver was none other than Lord Krishna. The illustration of Arjuna seated in his magnificent chariot, drawn by white horses and driven by Lord Krishna, is very beautiful in that it relates to one's own life. This illustration also appears elsewhere in the Veda, in the Kathopanishad. Body chariot analogy. In this illustration, your body is likened to a chariot. Your senses are the horses. The mind is the reins. And your intellect, buddhi, is the driver. You are the one who is seated in the chariot. In other words, you are the Swami, the master. If your buddhi is loose, if your understanding is not very clear, you can end up anywhere because your chariot, your physical body, will not take you to the destination. You can take the chariot to anywhere. Lust, love, karma, dharma or adharma, righteousness, anything, to moksha. It all depends on the driver, on you, the master. The driver, the buddhi, educates the master, really speaking. You are as good as your driver. If the driver is uneducated and drunk also, you have had it. If, however, your driver is informed, educated, and then he or she can take you anywhere you want to go. In the Gita, Krishna, the driver, became the one who educated Arjuna. He was a guru to Arjuna and Arjuna was the master, the one seated in the chariot. Arjuna ordered Krishna to station his chariot between the two forces so that he could see those in the enemy ranks with whom he would fight. Krishna moved the chariot as directed. From the vantage point selected by Krishna, Arjuna saw his own people in both camps and decided that nothing would be gained by fighting this battle. Arjuna found himself facing Bhishma, who was his grandfather, and Drona, who was his teacher in archery. He saw uncles and cousins, friends and acquaintances, and other relatives. These were the people Arjuna would be destroying, the very people he needed with him in order to be happy about winning the war. Therefore, he said, "I would rather not fight." We will see his arguments for this thinking later. The whole problem for Arjuna was one of, "These are my own people." We have this problem even today. For example, when we say "my people," we mean that our people can get away with doing anything and other people, unknown people, cannot. But in Arjuna's case, the people were not unknown. If the opposing army had been made up of men who were unknown to Arjuna, there would have been no Gita at all. Krishna would only have had to drive the chariot, nothing else, and Arjuna would have fought. However, Arjuna happened to see people he knew, people with whom he was connected, with whom he had to settle accounts, and people who in the process might die. This is what bothered him, as it should have. It would bother any cultured person, any mature person. These were the people who really counted in Arjuna's life. Duryodhana also saw the same people, but it did not bother him as it did Arjuna, because his value structure was different. There are a few select people in everyone's life whose opinions count. You may not want to be seen by them on New York City's 42nd Street, for instance. It may not be because you do not want to be there, but rather because you are afraid of what these people will think of you. You do not want to fall short of the good opinion they have of you. These were the people who were standing in front of Arjuna, against whom he was supposed to fight. Arjuna's dilemma. Because Arjuna no longer wanted to fight, he had a problem. According to the code governing the war in those days, there was no such thing as a successful retreat. Either you won or you lost. The loss amounting to death, since the fight was always to the end. Thus Arjuna knew that in order to hoist the flag of victory, he had to destroy all the people in whose company he would be happy and in whose absence he would be unhappy. Arjuna wept, not out of fear, but out of compassion, out of sympathy, out of care. His response was that of a mature person. He began to think that war was not the answer to the problem, which of course was true, given that the loser always prepares for a comeback. The First and Second World Wars are recent examples. No one wants to accept the fact that he or she has lost. Not only did Arjuna think war would not solve the problem, he also felt that its aftermath would create great confusion in the society. Since all the able-bodied people would be destroyed, the society would have no leadership, and the very structure of the society would disappear, because people would be confused as to their duties. Even Dharma, for the sake of which Arjuna was supposed to win the war, would be in trouble, for there would be no one to carry it forward to the next generation. Dharma is both a discipline and a life of discipline. The values that govern the discipline are also Dharma. The lifestyle, that is Dharma, has to be handed over to the next generation by the present one, and is not something that can simply be bottled and buried for the future. Dharma is something that has to be lived. Thus, When you protect a person who lives a life of dharma, you are protecting dharma. You can protect libraries, but you can never protect scholarship unless you protect the scholars. Protection of the scholar is the respect you have if you value scholarship. When your society values scholarship, the people will sell their shirts to gain that scholarship because it commands their respect. This was the situation in India. A king would come to his knees when a scholar entered his court. When scholarship is valued, respected in this way, the scholar will be protected and valued. Only then will scholarship continue. Similarly, to protect dharma, you have to protect the one who lives the life of dharma, the dharmi. If the dharmi, the one who is living the life of dharma, is protected, meaning that he or she is respected and valued, then everyone will want to be a dharmi. Arjuna naturally thought that by destroying these people, there would be no one left to live a life of dharma, and that the dharma itself would thereby be destroyed, the very dharma he wanted to protect by waging the war. The battle was supposed to be one of dharma, but the very fighting of it, he thought, would endanger dharma. Arjuna, therefore, felt that he would be incurring a great sin by causing confusion in the society. Naturally, he wanted to avoid this problem. At the same time, he did not run away from the battlefield. He did not jump out of the chariot and run towards some Himalayas, which was only a short distance away. Instead, he dropped his bow and arrows and sat back in the chariot, as we will see at the end of the first chapter of the Gita. Krishna's rallying cry. Arjuna was so completely overwhelmed by compassion, sympathy, and consideration that he could not fight. Addressing the sad Arjuna, Krishna expressed his sense of surprise. To extend his actual words, he may have said, "Arjuna, why did you get such a disposition? I never expected you to behave like this. This is not a time for talk. It is a time to act. To talk in the battlefield is not fitting your temperament at all. You are supposed to act. You are a prince, and the most respected prince at that. You are the greatest archer, and you are someone who is supposed to protect dharma. If you, of all people, do not want to do this, what will happen? It is definitely the wrong time for you to be talking like this. Had you told me a few years ago, while you were in the forest, that you did not want to return to the kingdom, that you wanted to study and contemplate, I could have appreciated it and we could have discussed it at length. But not here. You came to the battlefield, Arjuna. You even brought me along with you. Now you are making a right about turn. It is making you look silly, and you are making me look silly too. When I stake on a horse, I am ready to lose my bet, but I do not expect the horse to run. That much satisfaction I should have, and now you are telling me that you will not even start." Krishna then asked Arjuna to stand up and fight. It should be understood that not all of Krishna's words are scriptural. Here they were purely words of advice and not meant as an order. Only when he thought and dealt with the ultimate concerns in life, the universal problems that belong to me, to you, and to all, and sundry at any time and place, do his words assume the status of a scripture. Krishna was just giving Arjuna a pep talk. Recognizing that Krishna was talking to him as though he was afraid to fight, Arjuna exclaimed, How can I fight against Bhishma and Drona in this battle? They are men worthy of my respect. I would rather live the life of a mendicant and live on alms than destroy these people. This was Arjuna's thinking. Thank you.